I've got a G1. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine is a developer at Google. Sent me one.
That's pretty cool.
Well, I have to give it back.
But so that eventually.
Yeah. Eventually. He's in California. He'll never know. And I've been playing with it. And that's the old version of the Android operating system, and it's still hotter than now.
Right.
So I was actually very impressed. So I really want the Droid. Unfortunately, I can't get it cheaply until the end of July.
Still on contract
Yeah, it's called One Every Two.
Right. Ah, Verizon.
Right.
Yep.
It is Verizon.
Yeah.
And so, I'm thrilled with the idea, but I can't. I'll pay $200 for a phone. I won't pay $6.
Right. Right. That's iPhone.
Now, if
really
you want
cool.
to stay
if
married,
I could get it with just what I want to do, and I don't know if they'll let me do it once I go to Verizon. Is I want to keep my phone, set it to a minimum minutes plan because that's pretty much all I use anyways, and then get a data plan for the iPhone, but just data.
Yeah,
because I won't use it as a phone.
Yeah, I think, with AT&T now, 450 minutes is the smallest minute package you can get.
Yeah, which is just about what I can get for Verizon is the smallest one.
Yeah.
And it's like, I never use it all. Ever.
We're grandfathered in, my whole family. Our entire plan costs like $90 a year for three of us.
Wow.
But if we go to the Droid phone, then we're going to have to go
to a real
plan. Because we're grandfathered into a plan that was basically, 3 minutes a month and unlimited looking at the cover of the phone. That's pretty much all you got. but for us,
it served its purpose.
That's what it does. And up until the Droid, I didn't need a phone that did anything except make calls.
Right.
Now, of course, I have lust. I have lust in my heart for the Droid, and can't afford it yet. Can't slake that lust yet. Oh, well,
you're such a sick puppy.
I am. I admit it. I've never denied it. What? Have you heard differently?
Just don't tell his wife.
She knows. Please.
Such a sick puppy.
Absolutely.
Hey, and I want to try the Google GPS function.
It's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. Like I said, a friend of mine got one on Friday. The first thing we did, see? I hate you. Just so you know, just so you understand how it all works, I hate you with a deep and abiding hatred. Just so you know.
So why didn't you get one?
It's not time on my plan yet. I could get one for $600, or I could wait and get one for $200.
Which would telling you the error.
See, that's the point.
Potential.
Let's see.
That's cool.
But please don't hit my husband. I like him.
Oh, all right. So, just to make you happy. That's the only reason.
She's from the Banzai Institute. If you hit him,
Street
then
view.
She, yeah,
I want to see Street View.
She has to hurt me. I see Banzai. Yeah. Okay, I'll be careful.
I want to go down to Street View.
Wherever you go. There you are.
Been Street View.
Right. We tried it out. I said, navigate to the nearest Thai restaurant. And it did.
Probably will. It just gives a little time to get the thing.
I thought, okay.
Yeah, Google plus GPS.
I clicked on the yellow.
Our regular GPS in our car, which is a TomTom, it's going to do the same thing.
Hello.
But you're thinking that the GPS in the Droid is better than a regular GPS?
Yes.
Oh God, yes.
I have a GPS for my car because I can't get out of my driveway without help.
In Philadelphia, we actually said find Italian food for us, and it did.
It just so happened that they brought this out right when my contract was cycling, and I was up for new every two, so I was like, I'm there.
See, I can't do it until the end of July.
Ah.
So I'll just weep.
Okay.
Not quietly. All right.
Nick, we went down. We went to Street View. Looked at where my girlfriend's apartment is, and there's her upstairs neighbor standing on the porch.
Nice.
Okay, that's disturbing.
They usually blur.
Yeah, if it was on the if you had it on Google Earth, I'd be.
But boring. Just their faces.
All right. Are we all on this panel?
We are. Are you?
I'm on this panel. What panel are you supposed to be on?
We're supposed to be on the Internet Privacy panel.
Okay.
What panel are you supposed to be on?
I'm supposed to be on the Internet Privacy Panel. Lois Gresh is not able to make it, so I will be moderator.
Congratulations. I'm Nick.
Nick. All right, let's introduce ourselves, starting with Steve.
Hi, I'm Steve.
I'm Dave.
Hi, Steve.
Why are you on this panel?
We collectively are sound bites. We've had a radio show for over 20 years now. We're currently on member-supported Jazz 90.1, WGMC, streaming live at jazz901.org, and our own website, soundbites.org. And we talk computers, talk news, internet, pretty much everything.
It's going to be fun. Streaming yellow zombies here.
And I also work at Mac Ave, a local Apple authorized reseller. We sell and service all sorts of computers.
I'm Dave Enright, second member or the middle member of Soundbites. Again, we've been doing it for over 20 years now. I own my own business. It's called Enright PC, and I strictly deal in working with PCs. I also like to mention, since you folks are all into the cyber stuff and that we also do a second show every Friday night in Second Life. If you've never tried Second Life, it's a free virtual world that you can come in, create your own avatar. And again, there we answer people's computer questions every Friday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Meet some great folks, though, from all over the world.
Yeah. I'm Nick Francesco. I am the systems administrator for the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology. and the third member of Soundbites, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Well, I was number one, yes, I was first. But we've been doing this, like you said, for over 20 years, just on various radio stations, but we're happily ensconced now at member-supported Jazz 90.1. We have, like you said, Second Life at the Finger Lakes Community College, the FLCC Island. They were kind enough, the guy who runs it is a friend of mine, was kind enough to give us a piece of the area. So we're there and we're here and we're answering people's questions, and we answer them at line at Wegmans and at the movies, coffee stands, everywhere.
Dave and I have our names on our vans, and Nick is just Nick, so.
My license plate says
Soundbites, yep.
I'm Al Katerinsky. I'm a fellow of the National Science Foundation grant to study information assurance at the Graduate School of Management at the University of Buffalo, part of the Scholarship for Service program, and I've been studying information system security and information assurance for 3 years now. So, let's start this off. What is your first word about internet privacy?
I'm sorry, it wasn't actually a word as such. It was a.
Isn't that an oxymoron?
It was some sort of moron. If you think there's internet
like
privacy.
Like jumbo shrimp.
There isn't any.
There can be, up to a point. You have to be very, very careful. The problem with the internet is, for some reason, common sense, which of course is the least common element in the universe, just goes right out the window when people get on the internet. You know, there are certain areas in the city where you would not walk down the street with $20 bills hanging out of your pocket. Unless you know the shout. but generally speaking, when we get on the internet, we don't think about that. Right? And that's, you know, we don't keep our senses about us.
All right, don't be a jerk. That's a good way to start. Dave, what do you have?
Well, the whole thing is, you know, the internet has come upon us very fast. And too fast, we've also gotten very complacent. Folks are very quick to click on this, to click on that, or they're quick to believe emails and everything else that they're getting. If you have to stop and think about anything, especially emails or anything else, then don't click on it. It's a wise thing, you know, because otherwise you're just going to get yourself in, you know, major debt and allow people to get stuff into your machine that you're not even aware of. Because it can slow down the machines and be running in the background. You don't even know it, but they're stealing your information.
But you're not so much worried about adults doing this. Our age, you're talking more about teenagers.
No.
No.
It's more alert very frequently about such things than we are.
It used to be that it was kids essentially counting coup. You know, they weren't there to make money. They were there to put their names out.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reality nowadays is that most of this stuff is coming out of the ex-USSR country, all the stands, and it's being done for money. It's being done for profit, and adults are doing it. Excellent programmers, many of them, exceptional programmers, and so they're writing really good stuff because they're not actually interested in taking over your computer just to say they did it.
Right.
Like they're interested in taking over your computer so that they can use it as part of a botnet attack on a bank.
I've worked with Russians. They also like to say because they did it.
Well, they like that, but it's not the main the main reason. They will take the money.
There used to be the big glory in it, like the day the folks brought down CNN. Oh,
right.
Big deal. They put a virus on there. They were able to take CNN down.
Right. Peter Jennings mentions
something that puts his girlfriend's name.
Yeah, Peter Jennings mentions the Melissa virus on national television. That was
and
a big deal.
Somewhere. A 16-year-old has an orgasm. I get it. But it's not the way it works anymore. It's all being done.
The software said that the statistics are 90% of internet information breaches used to be due to malicious mischief, and 10% were financial in nature, and those percentages have flip-flopped within the last 2 years.
And it's not that people are dumb. It's like Dave was saying, that you don't read close enough. Oh, I got an email from Citibank. There's a problem in my account. Oh, I better go log in. I didn't know I had a Citibank account. I guess I forgot, so I better go log in. Or I better go log in and tell them I don't have a Citibank account. And those types of phishing scams are very easy to do, and they catch a lot of people. What was that statistic we had a few months ago?
86% of everything is bullshit. Oh, no, yeah.
Different they surveyed people and asked, if you click on spam, why? And it was like 20% of the people admitted they click on spam, and most of them were because I wanted to see what would happen, or I was interested in the product they were selling. And that brings up the difference between fake spam and real unsolicited commercial emails from real companies selling real products. Most of the spam you get is fake companies selling fake products just to steal your money. We used to talk about direct marketing with regular postal junk mail. They say about a 1% response is a good response to a direct marketing campaign and justifies the cost of the campaign. With email, there's zero cost in sending out a billion messages. So if one response, not 1%, one response, they've made their money back. And you send out a billion messages, you're going to get 5%, 10%. You'll get tens of thousands of people clicking on that link.
So we're talking about phishing. Everybody know what phishing is in the audience? Right? P-H-I-S-H?
Yeah.
Anybody not know what it means?
It's where you go to see a concert by guys who spent too much time on the
table. That's all you can get with Mo. You're right. Okay.
There was a social experiment a guy did last year. He bought an ad from Google AdSense. So you go to websites, and little ads pop up on the side of the page. And the ad was, is your PC virus-free? Click here to be infected. Thousands of people clicked there.
No.
Yeah, thousands. He made hundreds of dollars on this ad as a social experiment.
Well, no, because there will be people who will go...
Right, when people no, he didn't infect them.
So
right, so right, they could have got it for false. Yeah. But yeah, so people, when you buy an ad, you get paid when people click on that link. No, the other way around.
You pay Google makes their money because people buy an ad and agree to pay Google every time they get clicked on. Google is delivering.
Right.
You know.
He was not making money. It was part of a paper he was writing.
One of the other big scams that's really starting to come up, and you're going to see more of it now with the holidays coming, is these ads for emails from UPS. So if you folks are doing any mailing from UPS, these folks take the time. They are very due diligent in that they'll put the watermarks and everything else to make it look as official as they can that it's UPS or the Postal Service, to make sure that when you're clicking on it, that you're thinking, oh, yeah, I just did send maybe you're sending a package to somebody overseas in the armed service. And you click on it because they say there's a problem with your package. Oh, I better go click on this. But they don't take the time to really look that it's, not really the UPS, because they've got extra characters there or checking out the lights. So they click on it, and bam, they've got it.
You'll get emails from some companies saying your order's ready to ship. We just need to confirm it, and or there's a problem with your credit card. So especially as we get into holiday shopping seasons, the phishing attacks ramp up.
I constantly get emails telling me there's a problem with my eBay account. Yeah, the problem is I don't have one. But one of the things you can do, hold on a second, Alan. One of the things that you can do, and it's really very simple, but everybody rebels against doing it. Read your email as text only. You can, and almost every email program, you can turn off the HTML, which means you don't get all the pretty little cherubs in the corner and the music in the background and all the cute colors and things. But it also means that you actually see what the links are sending you to. And to me, that's worth not seeing the little cherubs.
Or at the very least, use an email client that will let you, when you hover, bring up the real.
Yeah, at the very least, but I'll tell you what, I don't get caught anymore.
There's a problem with that because right now one of the things that's going on is the entire email message is just a GIF or a JPEG of what would be text and message. So when you're on it, you don't have to click on the link. Anywhere on that picture will take you to the site.
Right. So, but if I turn all that off, I don't have a problem.
Yeah.
Green antivirus.
Green antivirus?
Yeah.
Are those the guys who make the UML stuff for Eclipse?
No. The green antivirus is some company.
It's
pop-ups on you are infected.
It's one of the latest fake antivirus, fake anti-malware. You get a message on your screen saying your computer's infected. You better click here to buy our program. Antivirus 2009 was another big one.
Windows antivirus.
And they use names that are very similar to real products or good sounding products. You know, we want a green antivirus, and they steal your money. If you're lucky, they just steal your money.
The worst one is you go to RedTube. RedTube downloads a DNS changer.
Right.
Next time you go back to RedTube, it says your computer's infected.
Right.
Forward you to a site where you buy antivirus software. That actually infects your computer with botnets that'll go and strip your account, your bank account number, your credit card number, any logins to anything you've got stored on there, and ships them to somewhere in the former Soviet bloc where there's lots of really smart people with nothing better to do.
Right. One of the things that's an easy way to at least know that this is fake, right, is it pops up and it looks like a Windows window, right? Change your color scheme. Windows have that blue border at the top. Every version of Windows comes with at least two different color schemes, one of which is silver. So it's a silver border at the top. Change it to silver. Now if you get something with a blue border on the top, it's fake.
And here's the green antivirus picture that comes up. It looks really, really good. It looks like a real program.
Whoever built that program.
They spent 10 minutes and made a good picture.
A bunch of money to make it look professional.
My favorite are the ones that come up and say, scanning your C drive.
Virus
infected. I run Linux, no C drive. Probably not actually infected.
HDA1.
Yeah, right.
So anyway. But the other scam we just had going on though with Samantha that's going around. They're sending out a mailing. This is how desperate they're getting. They're sending out a mailing, and they're sending you a check for $3,500. It's a legitimate check drawn on a legitimate bank. But it's a whole scam, because the minute you go and deposit, then they want you to start going and buying all this stuff online.
Which there are legitimate secret shopper services. Companies will pay you to go to stores and buy their products to test their sales service.
The thing of it is you go ahead and buy all this stuff, and a lot of it's being also diverted to other places, not your address. And
I'm not kidding.
The check bounces after a month. So now you're in the hole for all that stuff you just bought that probably half of it you won't see, and the check that bounced.
There's a scam like that on eBay and other auction sites where someone will buy something for, say, $100. They'll send you $200 and say, well, take the shipping costs out and just send me a refund for the rest. And they send you fake money or a fake check or a stolen check. And then you think you're doing right. You send them the refund. They now have real money. And then when the fakeness of whatever you deposited ends up, you're out the real money, too.
Craigslist has a real problem with that as well.
Yeah.
I'd like to switch gears a little. We're talking about cybercrime, and that's a really deep topic. We could probably spend the rest of the show on this. But what I'd like to talk about is even your legitimate transactions over the Internet are compromising your privacy. Mm-hmm. Once you put something out on the Internet, it goes through a series of servers, some of which will keep personal information about you till the heat death of the universe.
Yep.
Okay? There's a way to track that, at least one way, is from Google, has Google Dashboard, mm-hmm. new utility.
Just came out.
New utility that will tell you everything they're tracking about you. Every YouTube thing you've ever seen, every request you've ever made, all your email, everything. Now, if you think about that, this is a staggering amount of information that nobody really needs to know. Why are they keeping it? Why does the dog lick his balls? Because he can. This is part of the problem. The technology is so powerful that flagrant abuses of privacy have become commonplace. Now, I don't know, you know, you guys have been talking about really important stuff for people to watch out for the holidays, but even your regular stuff is compromising your privacy. Yeah.
There's an issue at Disney World that's come up on a few of the security podcasts I listen to. If you buy one of the multi-day passes, they require your fingerprint because they don't want your friends to use your multi-day pass.
Right.
So Disney is now collecting millions of fingerprints. Where are they going? What's happening to them? Are they safe? And that's a big question. So the early thought was you use your knuckle. So then it's not really your fingerprint, just something the scanner will read. But that's not working as much anymore from some of the last shows I've been listening to. So it's even innocuous places like that. And every other week you hear about a data security theft or a laptop stolen somewhere and hundreds of thousands of Social Security numbers have been stolen.
Mostly not from the machines they're on, though. Mostly from the backup tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people don't bother to encrypt the backup tapes. To me, that's basic security. You don't encrypt the backup tapes, you deserve to be slapped.
Well, I mean,
I am a systems administrator. It's what I do. Do the job right or don't do the job.
I'm an Army vet. Anybody here a vet? Army vet? Okay, did you get the letter from when the VA mm-hmm. lost all your personal information because guys took it on the laptop?
I was lucky. My information is old enough that it's all on paper.
Okay.
Same here.
Well, I got a letter from my friends at the VA 2 years ago talking about a laptop theft. Mm-hmm. The guys weren't really after the information. They just wanted the laptop. They're not after... sometimes what they're after is just your money. All right. The other thing I was going to say was every time you do a legitimate transaction with a large portal, that information is reported somewhere else, at least one place, sometimes two and three places. At ShmooCon, which is a hacker convention in Washington, D.C., we had a group of people presenting students at West Point, and wanted to interview them for the radio show, but of course, the preceptor said, no, I'd like these guys to graduate. So
yes. There's a West Point bus outside. There must be a bunch of...
Yeah, they were here for a hockey game last night. Yeah. They lost. They're not very happy about it. I could have told them.
I didn't...
Because they went up against RIT, but...
Yeah, I saw a couple guys with Army hockey shirts, and I'm... Army plays hockey?
And damn well, too. Yeah.
Oh, sir, yes, sir.
They are a pretty good team.
Basketball?
Yeah.
It's RIT. I mean,
yeah. These kids are born on skates, what can I tell you?
We're pretty close.
Difficult to live
with. Yeah.
Anyway, but that's one of the things, is just the mechanism by which these, you have your transaction going forward with Yahoo or eBay or Amazon or any one of the big portals, and that is they get money to give your information. They don't give me everything about you, and it's supposedly anonymized. Anonymized means they've taken your particular name off it, so they're collecting all this data. Okay? But the reality of the situation is your data is somewhere. In fact, it's lots of places.
Mm-hmm.
So your ha is actually quite well taken,
yep.
Because even your legitimate transactions compromise your privacy.
How many of you have used Skype or some sort of Oh, voice over internet. Yeah. Have you heard of a program called VOMIT? VOMIT is an acronym. It means voice over misconfigured internet telephony. And I go and set up my laptop. I teach a course. I teach a course in security. So I went and I decided I was.
You taught a course in VOMIT.
Yeah. I taught a class in VOMIT, but I taught a course in internet security. And what you do is I took my laptop out to RIT, out in one of the common areas, and I set it up, and I started VOMIT, and I just sat there and worked for a while it ran in the background, and then I stopped it. And what it did was it searched the wireless space for every voice telephone call, every VoIP call that was going on, grabbed every packet, put them all together, and turned them into WAV files for me. So I let it run for a couple of hours, got some nice WAV files on, because I would see kids come out, you know, in between classes and set it up and start talking. And one guy was deeply in conversation with somebody for the whole time. And I got back to my office and I started listening to stuff. And I realized there was not one thing I could show to my class. I heard conversations that I just...
TMS.
I spent 20 years as a professional actor, and there were some things I heard there that I'd never done. And that's going some, I'll tell you the honest truth. It was amazing, but I couldn't tell any of that to my tender young class's ears. Next time you're using VoIP, make sure you aren't in any sort of cyber cafe or anywhere where you're using wireless, because you don't know who's listening to your conversation.
Wireless with WPA security and stuff like that's okay, right?
Right, and RIT actually has that now.
You're just talking about open Wi-Fi.
I'm talking about open Wi-Fi. Sorry. If you've got WPA, no. If you've got WPA 2,
WPA is compromised.
WPA is just is a cracked shell.
Sure.
WPA 2, yes. WEP, no. WPA, no. WPA 2, absolutely. Well,
there's also an issue.
If you're on a network, then you have permission on WPA.
Right.
And somebody else is on the very same network, you should have access to everything that's passing through.
It depends on who's got the access point. I mean, I have a wireless network in my house, and I've set up it such that I only accept certain MAC addresses. But you know what a MAC address is?
I can spoof a MAC address in 10 seconds.
RIT?
Yeah. Say again?
I would do that at a university.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Universities do that. There are some that do. They require that you register your equipment with ITS.
RIT does that. You have to register your equipment, and you can only register, I believe it's up to 2 devices without having to beg and plead, and it gets kind of nasty. But once you've done that, you can get online, and you then use your username and password in the WPA 2 credentials, and you can get online. And on WPA 2, right now at least, you can't really crack WPA 2. WPA 8 you can crack in half an hour with a pocket watch.
For today.
Right. And WEP you can't, and then eventually some WPA 3 or whatever that is. But still, it's not really secure. What's really secure is WPA 2 Enterprise, and you're running VPN over it. That's about as secure as you can get, I think.
There's an issue that's been coming more to the forefront. Moxie Marlinspike showed it off at Black Hat a few weeks ago. If you're at a public Wi-Fi hotspot and you log into your bank over SSL, there is the potential that isn't really secure. Most banks, PayPal, eBay, Gmail login, the front page you go to is not secure. And you type your username and password, you click on the submit button, then it becomes secure. It's too late. You've already typed your username and password. If someone else on that open network is sniffing the packets, they can easily intercept that open front page and strip the security off of it. In the middle, it's a man-in-the-middle attack, and then you think you're logged in, you see your little security padlock icon, you think you're on a secure page, but someone has already sniffed in the middle. He did, as an example, went to a public Wi-Fi hotspot, and in a 24-hour period gathered several hundred passwords for banks, for eBay, for PayPal, for Facebook. So if the front page is not secure when you're logging in, you cannot trust the security. So what we have to do is start retraining ourselves to type https://paypal.com to start on a secure page to begin with. But not all services allow that first secure login page.
Right. Well, Frank had his hand up first earlier.
This is the third con I've gone to with a laptop. And they've been in hotels that had free Wi-Fi. And I found, I have this stuff. I found just for the hell of it, let me see what happens if I hit the networking. I see other people who are connected.
Is there someone named Allison Aleo in the room? Or Kendall Cormack? They're on this network on the open Wi-Fi. I can see their computer. There's five or six different zones. I could easily try to get into their computer because we're on a public Wi-Fi network.
Some reject the attempt. Others, you could walk right in.
Yeah. One of the things that the Mac has,
this is why I stick with this,
and that Windows 7 has, is the ability to share over the network. Now, it used to be, and I don't know if it's still true, but it used to be that the Mac OS enabled that by default.
It's off by default on the Mac.
Now it is? Okay, that's
yeah.
My daughter bought a Mac like a month ago, and no, she has to constantly turn it off.
See? And the reality is it's nice in a home situation, and, you know, Mac people are all age of Aquarius, and it's all nice. But the reality is out in the real world, that's a problem. And Windows 7 has the same problem now.
Well, not a real problem. It's just that they were going to include it in the coding, and they never...
No, it'll share. If you open that up, it'll share. And Alan will tell you, if I can get to your machine, I can get in your machine.
Yeah.
It's simply the way it is. The other thing to be careful of is, and it used to be mostly the Mac, but now it's almost every machine, you can set up your own wireless repeater or your own wireless relay.
We have somebody else here with a question.
Yep, hold on a second.
I even think the hotels... business network is on the same wireless network. I'm seeing business center computers. I'm seeing real computers here,
so
too.
What can happen is you can go somewhere and hook up to something that says, you know, free Rochester Wi-Fi. Yeah, and you believe that? Okay, good for you. I have some land I'd love to sell you. It's vertical, and it's in Florida. You can't trust it. Randall Monroe writes a web comic called XKCD. If you haven't read it, go find it. It's a treat. And he says that we need a national holiday to honor all those who have an open Wi-Fi system called Linksys. and I think, you know, to make everybody happy. I'm sorry, you had a question.
Yeah. Some of these websites, they do the remember my name, remember my password, and try to load a cookie on your
yeah.
thing. Now, I'm a cookie code, so I tend to hate them.
That's the convenience we like.
I guess the question is, when you log, if you've at home on a secure network gone to your Gmail or Yahoo and said remember me and has written a cookie, you're not typing in that username or password when you log in then on a public thing. I guess my question is that then a little more secure because you're not sending your...
It depends on how they save that cookie. Some places save it as plain text.
Right.
And that means that sitting on your laptop
that's not
is username and password.
Assuming it's at least secured from a cookie point.
And I'm sure these guys will tell you on the radio show that once you're done doing business on a particular site, like with your bank or somewhere you're spending money, shut your browser down and reopen it.
Log off.
That'll
first, too. Yep.
Because that'll change your session.
It resets
and your cookie information, well, the first number is your session number. Now, there are malicious cookies that are coming from sites that go in, and everything that's in the same session gets sent back to the home base.
Okay? Easy to do.
But if you've got a different session going, and I've got my Firefox to wipe out all my cookies at the end of the session, it's not as easy. It's more difficult because you've got two numbers to crunch.
If you're using Firefox, you have to restart it every 2 hours anyhow.
So I go to RedTube. My question,
I guess.
Say again?
My question was, does having that cookie stop your username and password getting posted in clear text when you're on a...
And what I was in the process of saying was yes and no. No, if that cookie saves your username and password in plain text, because then that gets sent over the net. Yes, if it has some form of encrypted session ID,
right.
It's not really a session ID. It's an ID that it says, okay, Joe Smith is I74FJ32, whatever that is. And then when you log back in, it says IJF732, whatever the number was. And then it says, oh, that's Joe Smith. Okay, I'll let him in. So you need to actually go look at your cookies before you can be sure. And even then, you've got a small problem, which is if I grab that cookie as it goes over the network, I'm you.
Even if it's encrypted.
Even if it's
encrypted. Don't need to know the contents of it. I have it. Yeah.
Right. So, no. The short answer would have been simply no.
One of the things I'm always annoyed by is people focus on security and privacy on the internet, ignoring the real world. You're in a restaurant and you hand your credit card to someone who disappears with it for 20 minutes. That's worse security. And my wife she left. She was back there for a while. My wife chides me because I check my bank account every day just about, checking for illegal transactions or unauthorized transactions, because it's getting really, really common now for people to run small charges on credit cards because they often aren't noticed. People just pay their bill at the end of the month. They don't notice $10, $12, $50. And there have been a lot of cases where unscrupulous vendors with credit card processing machine or just hackers on the internet will run hundreds of small charges on thousands of customers, which adds up to a lot of money for them, and most of the time they're ignored at the other end. So check your credit card statements, check your bank accounts. And what was it? Was it Verizon? One of the cell phone companies just got nailed for putting $2-3 fees for no apparent reason on cell phone bills. And you call them up to ask them what that is. They'll apologize. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a billing error. We'll take it off. Maybe. And then you'll fight them for 3 or 4 months while they keep your money.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a gas station that did that. Once he came through, purchased gas and left, a few weeks later, they put through the same charge.
Mm-hmm.
They were caught because they weren't buying enough gas to sustain
the amount they were charging for.
They were doing. Yes. So they caught because of that.
I've had my credit card number stolen twice, and I know it wasn't over the internet because I'm one of those people who goes and gets a one-time number whenever I buy something. And my daughter, for her birthday, everything comes from online and it all comes from bands and stuff like that. So I'm very careful when I buy stuff for her. And so it's all one-time. You can call your, depending on what your card is and what your deal is, but I get online and I say I need a one-time number to make a purchase. They give me a number. It's good for 24 hours, I think it is. I make, or 10 hours or 4 hours or whatever the number is, and I make the purchase and I'm done. And so I know it wasn't that, so I know it was just somebody I handed my card to.
Yeah.
Was it at Burger King? Was it at a restaurant? Was it at the gas station?
There have been mechanical hacks, I guess, where at ATMs, there's an extra reader in place.
Oh, yeah.
They just stick an extra reader in front.
They caught a big network of skimmers in New York City just this last...
Yeah.
Somebody
puts a little tiny camera over a cash register and watches credit cards go through. And then they get PIN numbers, too.
Well, there was also... it was on... 20-F. 20-F or so. Scam, what was it, on 2020, I think it was about a year and a half ago, where they literally put out purposely on the internet, displayed a couple credit cards. There was 3 of them, and they were $1,000 limit. And they sold the first one out there and offered it out, and it took them maybe about 20 minutes to deplete it. That they offered it out there for sale, and these folks quick bought it up, and they had it depleted. Once they knew this buyer was legitimate with offering, again, credit card numbers that he stole, the other two that he put out there took less than 5 minutes to deplete, the $1,000 limits. And what they were doing with these things is they were also running a reverse scam, is that they go ahead and buy the stuff, and then there was a guy just out in Phelps who wound up being caught into this. He went on the online site and got tracked into this young lady that offered marriage and all this other stuff. So she was having stuff shipped to him. It was the stuff that they were stealing through the credit cards and having delivered to his house. He was so in love with her, they were sending this stuff out. Again, it was being sent back to Russia, where they had this huge warehouse full of stuff that was bought off these illegitimate credit cards.
CNBC did a similar study of a scam from Nigeria.
Yeah.
And
they can wipe them out so darn fast. Yeah.
I remember in the early...
When you're in one of those online relationships, the woman at the other end ends up looking a lot like me.
Even in the early days, I remember a lot about phone cards. When we used to have phone cards and you had to type in your phone card number, there'd be people with binoculars across the street. And before you finished your call, your phone card was run up thousands of dollars.
One of the most famous cartoons ever done was two dogs with a phone, okay, and a computer, and they're ordering pizza. And one says to the other, on the internet, that no one knows you're a dog.
That's yep. Right.
Did you hear about the dog that got an Xbox?
No.
The story is
yes,
a dog was chewing on an Xbox controller and ordered Microsoft points. Okay, the guy didn't want to pay for his Microsoft points. Well, apparently, Microsoft got such a kick out of that, they gave the dog its own gamer tag.
Which shows more humor than the Microsoft title.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay. I posted stuff on Fido when it's clear back in the 80s. Can still find it.
Google yourself. You'll be amazed in what it finds.
How do I get rid of it?
You don't. Once it's out on the internet, forget it. You kissed it all goodbye.
You can theoretically ask Google to remove stuff from their cache. Because a lot of celebrities are doing that. They don't want information about themselves out. There have been cases where foreign countries have complained about Google caching. In fact, in some countries, it's illegal to cache information like that on the internet. Theoretically, you can ask Google to remove it. No. It's there.
Is this the time to talk about Facebook's use policy?
Doesn't them keep which evil so one of this week? God, the memory capacity they have?
Hard drives are cheap.
Are you kidding? They have no limit.
No, you don't understand. Google has buildings like five times the size of this hotel that are just servers.
A consumer terabyte hard drive is $100.
Let me put this into perspective. Yeah. You know what cloud computing is?
Yeah.
Cloud computing is the fact that these big service providers like Google, like Amazon, like Azure, like everybody, have so much extra capacity that they can afford to sell you storage at 15 cents a gigabyte per month. Okay?
And at that, they're making a crap load of money.
They're making a lot of money.
In fact, the new one, Carbonite, which does remote backup from your computer, they're $5 a month, unlimited storage. And they're sustaining their company with that because hard drives are so cheap.
It has been said, although Google doesn't talk much about the way they run their server farms, that when a Google server dies, they don't care. They don't even pull the server. They just bring another one back online.
I have a number of friends who work for Google, but one of them does server stuff. And he's high enough up in the company that he wanders all over the world going to the various Google data centers. And he said, I don't care how many data centers you think we have, you're wrong.
In 2006, I found this on Google. On 2006, the Google search engine had 850 terabytes. Google Analytics is 220 terabytes. Google Earth is 70 terabytes. We're talking about petabyte storage now.
And, by the way, I guarantee you, because like I said, I have friends who work at Google, they have, at a minimum, triple redundancy.
In fact, there's a really cool white paper Google released on the...
hard drives.
Hard drives, what's the word I want? How long they last,
mortality,
how well they...
Mortality,
thank you. And they studied 100,000 hard drives, which was a tiny little fraction of the drives they had. They did, and they found, like most electronics, 20% of them die the first year, and 20% of them die the second year, and 20% of them die the third year.
But that doesn't matter because of Moore's Law.
Do you
know what Moore's Law is?
How does that apply to rotating disks?
Because I replace my 40 gigabyte with a terabyte for the same price! 2 years later, my 40 gigabyte hard drive, I can buy a terabyte hard drive for the same $140.
And you have to do that because of Rule 34.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tomorrow it's 75.
Yeah, and
let's stop the bidding
war.
All right.
Go ahead.
I'm not trying to question, but you don't even see it.
Yeah.
Oh, brother.
I'm sure you've noticed that increasingly more and more of the grid is protected by this adult classification. You have to be age verified to access.
Mm-hmm.
How right. safe have you found that so far if you're bothering to get age verified?
Like anything else, you know, these kids are going to find ways around it.
Well, even the kids that are age verified are still yeah. idiots. Was it griefers?
Yeah, the griefers. I mean, we get...
They're
we
of
get,
legal age, but they're still idiots.
We get griefers. We've had... griefers come to us in Second Life when we were doing our show. And I've gotten a number of additional tools that now I welcome them. I hope they come because I've come up with these other tools that I can sit there and literally just display them right there and they can't do anything. I lock them right up. But to answer your question, though, yes, there was, for you folks that don't know, Linden Labs went through a whole turnabout in their PG SIM ratings and everything else, and they're restricting where kids can go. Again, only for their own protection, you know, because some of this adult stuff can be very vivid. I mean, there's one guy they had, I think, on 2020 again, talking about how he literally has made a fortune. He went out and got this costume where, and they videotape doing sex acts, and he videotapes it and sells these as what they call as a script. So there's a lot of money to be made since they did away with the gambling into the sex and the fighting and the gaming and everything else, but they're still trying to keep the younger kids away from that.
Well, I was wondering, actually, how safe you found the age verification software itself. Privacy, not at all.
You know, it all goes back to when we were kids in high school and we forged our parents' signatures.
Yeah.
That's
still easy enough to do.
It was the security. I was asking if my identity is going to be stolen if I use the software to get verified.
No.
They use Aristotle.
It could.
It could.
They use Aristotle for that verification, and there's been horror stories about Aristotle selling their information that they're putting in.
I haven't heard too much of the selling, but it can be cracked.
It could easily be, it could have been it could be broken into, it could
correct,
be stolen.
You know, and they're really trying to do something secure, but like anything else.
The real problem is those servers have your information. That makes them a great target for someone else.
They claim they're not keeping.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah,
I'll bet they do.
But, you know, I mean...
Not taking that bet.
But the realistic part of it, is, again, if a hacker's going to go into it, you know, how much time and effort does he want to put into that versus going into some, trying to break into some bank or someplace else where he can get a lot of personal information. Another place that's been, that I work with is, believe it or not, an OBGYN's office. They've been tried, they've had at least in the past 6 months, six attempts at trying to hack into their database. But you think about it, doctor's office is a, and, you know, dentist, even a dentist, if they can crack into there, you've literally given them so much information, social security numbers, insurance numbers, where you live, everything else. Banking information.
Medicare fraud is huge these days.
I mean, it is getting very rampant. So, I mean, they're going to go after something bigger fish.
Let me switch gears again because we're running out of time. And an issue I wanted to bring up is we've been talking about stuff getting taken from you. The thing I wanted to talk to you about is a lot of times people give their privacy away. Social networking sites, people... lose, what did you say? They lose their common sense? They lose their common sense and they put things on the social networking sites that they would never do if they were sober. Okay? There have been lawsuits by employees who have been fired for their Facebook and what's the other big one?
MySpace.
The contents of the... There was a school teacher who had herself, drunken pirate, as a picture of her, dressed like a pirate at a costume party, getting loaded. School board catches that, goodbye, she's out. She sues, she loses. She appeals, she loses. She's still appealing. It doesn't look like she's going to win, okay?
Stewardess had pictures taken of herself in sexy underwear
Is that right?
In an empty airplane.
Uh-huh.
Fired her on the spot the minute they found out about it. And what's interesting is that Facebook's security is Mickey Mouse at best. And a lot of companies are beginning to hire people to crack the security. If they're going to hire you, they're going to look at your Facebook and MySpace accounts, and they're going to look past the public stuff because they want to know who they're hiring and what kind of moron you are.
And one of the easiest things to do to break into someone's account, you don't even have to have a lot of hacker skills or anything like that. Get on the phone. Hi, this is Bill from IT. I need your password to check on something. And most people...
What's that called, pal?
Yeah.
It's called social engineering.
Social engineering, yeah.
Social engineering because there is no patch for human stupidity. You can do
I mean, that's like they were saying, though. I mean, a lot of these college students right now should be very afraid. Because, you know, they're going to these frat parties and everything else and having their picture, whether they're putting their cheeks on the copier or anything else, and putting that up. You know,
the reality
businesses
is,
are checking this stuff out.
The point is one of the background checks that's being done pretty much standard now by large employers is they check your Facebook page. They do vanity searches on the internet. They do everything.
Do Google searches on the internet. I have a shirt that says, sometimes, late at night, I Google myself. And you should all do that every once in a while because you would be shocked at what you will find. Just don't Google your name in regular Google. Go into images and Google yourself. You know, seriously, the reality is, if it ever hit the internet, it lives forever.
My name is used as the syndrome for a disease in a science fiction novel, and that's the first hit when I put my name.
Fortunately, I have the name of a relatively famous actor. He's the buddy of the leading man in a lot of movies, Stephen Ray from Scotland. So it takes three or four pages before you get to me. But yeah, it's there.
Mine is about 10 because of the Canadian war correspondent.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Which is very.
But the reality is, Google yourself, and Google yourself. Look far enough to find you because prospective employers will. You know, the reality is, if it ever hit the internet, it lives there forever, and you have to deal with that.
I did Stephen Ray Rochester, and I'm hit number 2.
There you go.
Which. Actually, it's not me. It's a friend of mine on Facebook. Her list of Facebook friends is me.
Right.
Oh, so, they can be bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something you have to worry about is not just what you're doing, what your friends are doing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
This is like venereal disease. It's not It's everyone your friends have slept with.
Well, that's one of the reasons we call it a virus on the computer, because it acts like a biological entity.
It's more disturbing than Googling yourself and finding all this information about yourself. Googling yourself and finding nothing. Where'd I go?
Okay.
That's what I was going to hopefully ask about. But okay, clearly, if things get on the net, other than contacting Google and asking them to remove things from your cache, what can you do if things are out there to try to at least bury things further in searches?
Nothing.
What can you
do? Nothing.
You can call the original source to try to get it removed, but the Google cache has everything.
Other things you can do to try to obfuscate, throw more information in to try to
anonymize yourself as much as possible.
Yep.
Never use your real name online if you can possibly help it.
Never let your picture be taken.
I'm thinking of what other damage control can you do?
It's almost impossible to do any damage control if you've had that picture taken at a drunken frat party or, you know, half naked in an airplane or whatever that's about. That's going to live there forever. You can do is, you know, profess that you found Jesus and deny your entire life.
Well, even the problem with, we're running it with Homeland Security in the watch list with some other people with the same name. I read something the other day about a 2-year-old toddler was denied access to an airplane because his name was on the watch list.
Because you could even download those, you know, somebody else could download those images, or if they're taking a dump because they were collecting those pictures, you could go ahead and get this stuff all removed. And then if they turn around and repost it somewhere else, so goes the cycle.
They can actually remove things in good faith, but the next backup cycle brings it back.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah,
so.
Yes?
Coming back to publishing things. Obviously, this is a wider convention. People want to get their stuff out on the internet.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can go to the journal sites and all this stuff and print out your stuff. But let's say you want to do a good job and get a domain. I've signed up for domain. What do they want? your real name, an email address, and your home address.
Now, yep.
That goes into the Whois database, which anybody can search.
Yep.
Which means that if you own a domain, that all of that information is out there for the world to see.
Well, there are a couple of ways around that.
To do that
I tend to get all of my domains from Jerry Seward, CLSS Enterprises. He does servers for everybody. All the Fox shows are on him. I mean, he's not a fly-by-night guy, okay? He's a big guy. Victoria's Secret does him. Penthouse does him. Big companies do him. Big companies do him. And I don't mean just Penthouse, but the whole, you know, that whole publishing arm, the whole Fox, all the Fox shows, all of that stuff.
They trust him that much.
They trust him that much. So I get all my stuff done through Jerry. He's a local guy. And he's constantly telling me he's way too cheap. But when all of my domains are registered, they are registered under CLSS Enterprise.
Who's the Francesco group?
That's me.
Yeah. I just didn't know who is. I'm you.
That is the only place you will find that.
Yep.
There is no Francesco group.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get email for the Francesco group, when I get a phone call, I'd like to speak to Mr. Francisco, please. So Jerry said, I got to put in something. What do you want me to put in? I said, the Francesco group. Okay. I probably should have said the Smith group or the, you know, whatever.
I'll start sending email to him. Okay. let me quickly say, I want to get, we're running out of time right now. I'd like to get a last, final piece of information from each of our panelists, and then we will let the guest of honor come in here and give his guest of honor speech.
Perfect.
So, Steve, if you'll start us off.
Read messages carefully before you click OK, before you act on it. Make sure it's something real.
You probably didn't win the Irish sweepstakes.
Yeah.
The other thing that I would say is, you know, these folks, and they'll do it all the time, is do not click on it to be removed from a group. That is the fastest way to send up a flag that, yeah, I'm a live person. Go ahead, spread my name around further. Do not click on anything to be removed.
And let me just say that each and every one of you, clearly, by being fans of fantasy and science fiction, have shown yourselves to be in the top 2% of the intelligent people in the known universe. Don't be stupid on the internet. Use the brains you clearly have as much there as anywhere else.
I can't top that. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you all.
And you can listen to our show every week, Saturdays from 12 to 2 on 90.1 FM on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And you can become a member.
And you can become a member. And Fridays, 9 p.m. Eastern in Second Life.
Jazz901.org.